Today, I'm joined by half of the Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast, program director at 94WIP Sports Radio, Spike Eskin. What's going on, Spike?
How are you?
Everything's good. Everything's good. It's basketball season on the way. The East is looking tight from 1-6. Sixers are right in the mix of it. The season going to go down to the wire. Can't wait for it.
Yeah, it looks like, the Eastern Conference from 2-6 is what, within 3 games of each other.
Yeah.
And seeding will be so important for the Sixers, too, with how they've played it at home and on the road. It should be a really interesting second half of the year.
Yeah, the Sixers are like night and day. They lost 2 games at home, I believe, which is crazy.
Yeah.
They have a great home court event, as well as Fargo's going to be rocking.
Yeah. They've been so good at home, which makes it even more frightening how bad they've been on the road. So, it should be really interesting. It 2 seeds definitely within reach. There's no way they're getting to 1, but the 2 seeds within reach, and I think it would be really, really, really important for them to get that.
Yeah, Milwaukee has like a 10-game lead, I believe, for the 1 seed right now. So they keep playing where they're playing. They're going to hold on to that. We'll see how the second half of the season goes after the All-Star break, though. But, you know, anything can get hot, so we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, for sure.
The Sixers won today. Ben Simmons put up, 34-12-12? That's crazy.
Yes, it is.
That's crazy. That's a crazy 34 triple-double.
Yeah, he had a great game, great second half too. You know, he's ever since Embiid's gone out, he's played well. But in the second halves of games, at least offensively, he hasn't really been the same guy. So who knows? Maybe today was the last day you could get All-Star votes in. So maybe Ben knew that and wanted to get that last All-Star bump in.
Yeah, definitely. I believe that pushed the Sixers to 29-16. They're like 5th or 6th in the East right now before today's game settle in. I have a question. What do you think would be more important for the Sixers long term going into the playoffs this season? Ben Simmons and his jumper, because we all know the reaction when he hit his first career 3-pointer. The crowd went crazy. His ability to hit the 3 consistently, or a healthy, skilled Embiid. Because we all know Embiid is one of the greatest skilled big men I've ever seen. Like, he's up there with Wilt skill wise. Like, his game is ridiculous. His game is ridiculous.
Yeah, I would say while they're both obviously really, 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 really important, and I'm not sure. I think it's pretty clearly Embiid. I think there's a world in which they could win a championship with Ben not shooting, but I don't think there's a world in which they could win a championship with Embiid not healthy, right? You know, he's the best player on the team, and I think you could look back at the last 50 years of the NBA, and there's probably not a team that won a championship without their best player on the court. So, I think they're both really important. The Ben thing is pretty interesting because, without context, if you don't look at the situation he's in and you look at all the great things he does, it's easy to say, why do you talk so much about the jump shot? But the problem is that he was the one that wanted to be the point guard, you know, and there's not a lot of teams in the NBA who have anything but their center not shooting. And Ben is not a center, you know, they have a center, and I think a lot of people have compared him to, you know, what if he was like Draymond, and, you know, the difference is that Draymond can play center and Ben can't, and Draymond isn't playing with Joel Embiid. I think the Ben thing is really important for the next, 5 to 7 years of the Sixers. But if you're going to ask me which one is more important, I would say Embiid.
Yeah, and the Sixers did a good thing by essentially getting Embiid's Achilles heel by getting Al Horford, because, you know, we all know Al Horford gave Embiid fits, and now they have him. There's really no one in the East, really, in the NBA, can really contain him right now.
Well, except Marc Gasol has been really good, you know, and that would be, aside from the Bucks, the team in the East that I think the Sixers should worry about
right.
not having home court the most against would be the Raptors. You know, the Raptors have a couple of perimeter players, a few perimeter players, right. and Lowry and Van Vliet.
Yeah, Siakam. Siakam is balling.
Yeah, but they've got Marc Gasol, and I'll tell you, man, Marc Gasol has given Embiid fits, and and that would be, even without Kawhi, that's a pretty tough series for the Sixers, especially if they don't have home court. It's basically been those two guys, right? It's been Horford, it's been Gasol. Right. I'd be interested to see what a full series of Brook Lopez would look like, because Lopez is the same sort of guy, you know, a big sort of hard guy to move.
Yeah.
So I think he might be interesting too, but it's really comes down to Gasol, I think, in the East.
And Lopez can stretch the floor. His 3-point shooting is on. he opens the floor for Giannis a lot. We all know Giannis doesn't need that much room regardless, but with him on the floor and them two together, that makes the Bucks offense more difficult to guard. It definitely does.
Yeah, I mean, you think about if you were designing a team for Simmons to play around and you were looking for a center,
right?
You know, Brook Lopez, a guy who can play interior defense, but also doesn't mind just on offense sitting around the perimeter and shooting threes, would almost be perfect,
right.
You know, to pair with Simmons, actually. So,
I agree with you with Joel Embiid being the most important player, but we all know if Ben Simmons can hit his three consistently, we all know it opens up the floor more for the Sixers as a whole, because we all know with Ben Simmons coming downhill, he's hard to stop in transition. And if he can pull up and make the defense come to him, that'll give Embiid more room in the paint, more room in the paint to work with. And we all know that's a wrap if he's one-on-one in the post. So that'll definitely...
Yeah, that's the most frustrating thing about, you know, the two things you're talking about, the Simmons shooting and Embiid being healthy.
Right.
Embiid not getting injured is not really up to Embiid, you know, and that's what makes the Ben Simmons shooting thing so frustrating, because that is up to Simmons. You know, we've seen him do it. I don't know that he'd be a really good 3-point shooter, but he would certainly be, he can certainly shoot it.
Right.
And that's what makes him not shooting it so frustrating, because he can do it, you know, he's capable. And that's the hardest thing to deal with. I think that's why people have such a hard time resolving why he doesn't do it, because they've seen him do it.
Yeah.
You know, it's not, Joel Embiid didn't decide to tear a ligament in his finger or break his foot or tear a meniscus in his knee or break his face. That he didn't pick any of those things, but Ben is choosing not to shoot, and that's what makes it so frustrating, I think.
Yeah, and Embiid is averaging, what, I think 23-12 this season. Definitely a big part of the offense. So, Spike, tell me a bit about your journey. How did you get into radio? What made you know this is what you wanted to do? What pulled you in?
So I went to college. I went to the University of Southern California.
Right.
And I was an undeclared freshman, and I took a journalism class, and I liked it. And I ended up transferring to Syracuse because there was an earthquake while I was in L.A., and it scared me. And And you know what, I'll tell you, anyone who's not been in an earthquake, it is the single scariest thing I've ever been in my entire life.
Right.
So I went to Syracuse, and I thought I wanted to do sports radio.
Okay.
But I ended up liking music radio better, and I worked in music radio for about 14 years.
Okay.
And then it wasn't until my mid-30s that I ended up started writing about sports, started doing some podcasting, and I ended up working at WIP. I ran their website and their social media accounts, and I was on the air for a while.
Right.
And that was when I sort of, between that and the podcasting, that's when I sort of started liking doing that stuff. So I've been at WIP since, 2012. So it's been 8 years. And it's been a learning experience. I learned something new every day, you know?
Yeah, I love podcasting, man. You get to connect with great people, talk about the same things. fun. It's very fun. So about
it's funny. When we started our podcast in 2013, there were no other Sixers podcasts, zero. And now I think there are like nine. and it's crazy how the world has changed in the 7 years we've been doing it, you know.
Right, and your podcast is great. I got to tell you, you guys take trips all the time. You recently took a trip to Indiana when y'all played the Pacers, and y'all went and checked out TJ McConnell. How did you organize these things? And your following, you had like 200-300 people there with you. How is it knowing you had that much of a following with something you created?
It's pretty scary. you know, when we started doing it, I'm not even sure that we thought anybody would even listen.
Right.
And now, you know, we can bring hundreds of people. You know, we brought 500 people to Minnesota last year and 500 to Milwaukee the year before. And, you know, our lottery parties ended up with a few thousand people. I don't know. I think the thing that I'm most proud of is that the people who show up at the events and have supported us have all been very good-hearted and nice people. And we've been able to raise a lot of money for the charities we've supported. And I think that's been the best part of it, is that we've been able to, you know, turn it into a community of people who are supportive, but also have been able to support, you know, important causes. Right. You know, I've been an animal guy for a while, and we've helped out a lot of animal shelters, and we also support a charity in Philly called Coded by Kids, which is a charity that teaches entrepreneurship and computer coding to inner city youth that don't get those sort of that sort of opportunity. So, you know, we've done a lot of good things in addition to a lot of stupid T-shirts and a lot of ridiculous trips. Right. So it's felt good, you know. And when we went to Indianapolis, I think this was the same thing when we went to Minnesota.
Right.
Seeing the reaction from Covington when we went to Minnesota, and Indianapolis from TJ when we went to Indianapolis, they were so thankful. It was truly a really personal connection from the fans and the people that went to the player. And I like that the players knew, especially those players knew, how much these folks supported them. I thought that was really important to know.
Yeah, that's one thing about Philadelphia fans. They love you, they love you.
Yeah, wherever you are, you know, wherever you are. So it was funny when we were at the thing in Indianapolis. It was on New Year's Eve, and we had a party that night, and TJ came, and he brought his wife. And his wife was laughing, and she looked at me, and she was like, why do they like him so much? And I was just like, you know, I was like, that's Philly, man. And I think they missed it too. You know, this was the first city they lived in after he graduated. So, you know, I think all those guys, I think Dario and Covington and TJ all look at Philadelphia as home in a pretty big way.
Yeah. Being shown appreciation goes a long way.
Death goes a long way.
So how's it working with the other half of the Ricky Sanchez podcast, Michael Levin? How's it working with him?
It's been a good 7 years, man. I think, you know, we started, Mike just turned, I'm a lot older than Mike. Okay. I'm 43 and Mike just turned 30.
Okay.
So we started doing this when Mike was 23, which is, you know, is like a, that's like a kid, right. You know?
Right.
And, it's amazing that I've known him as long as I have. And we do two podcasts a week. So, you know, people, the thing is so we talk to each other on the podcast for 2.5 hours a week.
Right.
And when you think about your life, there's not really anybody else in your life that you talk to that long, you
right.
know,
understand
in 1 week.
You're right. Understand
you know,
what you mean. Yeah.
So we, yeah, I think a lot of our relationship can, sort of like a married couple in a way, you know, you fight and you get annoyed with each other and but I think over time we've really learned to appreciate what the other one brings to it. And, you know, I think over the last couple of years, you know, it was really important to me. It was funny, about a year and a half ago, I was getting really frustrated because Mike did not see things the way that I did with the Sixers, and it made me mad. And I think what clicked for me one day is that it was important that he felt differently than I did, because not all fans feel the same way.
Right.
And,
right.
You know,
right,
I
yes.
think there are,
I know exactly
there
what
are,
you mean.
Yeah, you know, so there are people
yeah.
that think that I'm full of shit all the time and Mike's right.
right.
But there are also people that think Mike's full of shit all the time and I'm right.
Right.
And I think we learn to give each other the space to think how we really think.
Right.
And I think those differences have been important.
Yeah, people like hearing differences on the air. It gives the show a different feel.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, he's a really different person who thinks really differently about a lot of things than I do, and I think that's what makes it good, you know.
Last year, Jimmy Butler was the go-to guy. It was a stretch where he had like maybe like 3-game winners in a row, I believe, to pull the Sixers to wins. This year, Tobias Harris has really starting to step into that role. Do you think he can? You think he can fulfill those shoes?
I don't. I don't. I think the problem is just that he. I don't think that anything he does offensively is deliberate enough or aggressive enough to be that guy at the end of a game.
So you think maybe?
I don't think
Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I just like if you're going to be a small forward, like you know, a 3-4, like
yeah.
you know, sort of like that Carmelo. He's not Carmelo, but that sort of player. You really need a really good first step and a really quick release.
Right.
And so you have the ball if you know and before you've dribbled, and you can sort of be in that stance where they don't know what you're going to do.
Yeah.
And he doesn't really have a quick first step, and he ain't dribbling by anybody. So
right.
I think he could hit big shots, but I don't think he's the guy that creates them. You know, I don't think that will ever be him.
Yeah, those two guys that does that, honestly, are the guys we talked about earlier, Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid. You know, in the post, Joel Embiid can create his own shot. And Ben Simmons is so tall, he can shoot over damn near anybody that's guarding him. So those two can create their own shots.
Yeah, I think Simmons needs to get better at it. You know, he in the half court is sort of tough because they know he's not going to shoot.
Yeah.
So at the end of a game, they can sort of back off 4 feet, and it makes it harder for him to get by anybody.
Right.
And it's tough in the NBA as a post player in those situations because they've relaxed the defense such that it's sort of easy to swarm a guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. That happens. So I think that's probably the thing that they're missing the most is somebody at the end of a game who can be handling the ball and create
right.
a shot for themselves or someone else.
Yeah.
We'll see if there's anybody on the team who can do it. I I still think they're missing that player. Yeah. But we'll see. Yeah.
How much do you, in your opinion, how much do you think the team misses JJ Redick's clutchness from the outside? Because we all know with him on the floor, you definitely had to space the floor. He does space the floor. You had to keep an eye on him and keep the defense modest and not leave him open.
Yeah, they miss him a lot. I think Joel misses him probably the most. You know, it seemed like the only play the Sixers ran for the last 2 years was that dribble handoff with JJ and Joel. And there's not really anybody on the team who can do that. And Redick would shoot from three so much with so little space, and also quickly far away.
Right.
It made the defense respect it, and they now in the playoffs it was tough because he would get hunted on defense and I think Sixers fans made a bigger deal out of that than need be. I think if you have enough great defensive players, you can make up for somebody like that. You know, they miss him. You know, they miss him a lot. Furkan's been way better than I think any of us have thought.
Yeah.
But he's not Redick. Right. You know, he's not.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, that JJ Redick move was one of the moves that the newest GM, Elton Brand, has made. I think Elton Brand is doing a great job. I was able to connect with him and when he was the G League coach for the Blue Coats before he went up to the Sixers. So he's a great GM. The moves he's made with bringing Jimmy Butler in and then Al Horford and with Tobias Harris, now Josh Richardson, which added a lot of athleticism to the Sixers lineup. I like that move with Josh Richardson. I like that move a lot.
Yeah, Elton, for his first general manager job and really his first NBA front office job, it has been you know, it's a really challenging situation for somebody for their first gig. Elton is a really smart guy and a really good guy.
Definitely. And aggressive. He's aggressive with his moves.
Yeah.
He's aggressive.
Yeah, I don't envy him at all because I know, you know, he took the job and I know the organization wanted to win right away. So being patient, I don't think was really ever an option for him. You know, he's. I think he has done an admirable job in the situation he's in.
Right.
If it were me, if I were running the organization, when your best players are 25 and 23,
right.
I think they probably should have been a little more patient than they were.
Okay.
But that said, I don't think Elton was ever really given that option.
Right. And I was able to meet with and connect with you at the Sixers Fieldhouse when you did your own podcast. You had a whole section full. And when y'all did that chant, Trust the Process, at the end, the stadium was rocking. I got to ask you again, how is it having that following and just all those people stayed just for your podcast, which is crazy. I like your show. I like your show a lot. How was it? How was the podcast at the Sixers Fieldhouse? How was it seeing all those people just sitting there, like in awe of you talking?
Yeah.
Seriously, they all had on their own Ricky Sanchez shirts and everything.
Yeah, we sell a lot of shirts. I never take it for granted.
Right.
I will say that.
Humble,
it was,
be humble.
It was,
be humble.
Yeah, we've done a few live shows at it used to be called the Electric Factory in Philadelphia.
Yeah,
it's called the Franklin Music Hall now.
Okay.
And it's a concert venue where I've seen like some of my favorite bands and then we're sitting on the stage talking about basketball and we have a thousand people standing there watching us. So it's wild. It's funny cause at the Fieldhouse, and that was a fun night.
Yeah.
And they did a good job. Everyone in the audience could hear us great. The problem was I could not hear Mike or the people we were talking to.
Right.
So it was funny doing the interviews without being able to hear the answers. But it was cool, man. I mean, that was a cool night. I heard there was a pretty big traffic jam getting in, which I think is really funny too. It seems like it was a pretty big night for the field house.
Yeah, it was. It definitely was. There was a lot of people there that night.
Yeah. We'll have to do it. We'll have to do it again there at some point.
Yeah, definitely. Love to have you back in the area. Definitely. Yeah. The Eastern Conference, one team that's neck and neck with the Sixers right now are the Pacers, which are 2-1 against the Sixers right now. And we all know they're getting Oladipo back soon. But we know Oladipo's going to need time to get acclimated back to the offense and to the NBA period off of his injury. But come playoff time, he should be full speed. How much of a matchup issue you see that being with the Sixers?
They're tough, man. I mean, you know, I think the toughest thing about Indiana is they play. It's actually the same reason I think the Magic give the Sixers trouble is they are big and they play great defense.
Right. And we all know playoffs is about matchups.
Yeah, and the Sixers, like, their advantage over most teams is that they're bigger and they play better defense.
Yeah.
And then they play a team like Orlando or Indiana, and here's this team where, you know, Brogdon is a really good defender, and then you have, you know, you've got Sabonis.
Yeah, Sabonis
and
is
Turner, and, you know, they're just a big team that, you know, they play hard. They play good defense. We had so much trouble defending TJ Warren. They're a tough team, man, and when they get Oladipo back, that's tough, man. We've had a lot of trouble. The Sixers have had a lot of trouble this year guarding guards who are good pick and roll guards, and both Brogdon and Oladipo are both good. And that's a tough team, man. I did not think they were going to be as good as they are, but they're going to be good.
Yeah.
You know, they're already good, but when Oladipo gets back, I'll tell you what, man, TJ McConnell is never going to let this team forget that they let him go. He plays, he turns it up to 11 against the Sixers, man. He is, he is wired when he plays against the Sixers. So that's a tough team.
Definitely. And besides a boost on the bench, it's going to be a mental boost. You know, they know they're going to have the leader back on the floor. So they're definitely going to be more dangerous when he comes back.
Yeah, and, you know, Aaron Holiday has played really well for them too.
Right.
You know, they're deep, and like I said, they play tough defense, and they're perfectly happy playing a, you know, 96-92 game.
Right.
And, you know, it's just really going to come down who could, like, this is what I would ask you, like, a game like that's going to come down to who can make shots at the end. And if I gave you Oladipo or anybody on the Sixers to get a bucket at the end of the game, who would you give the ball to? And I would give it to Oladipo, you know?
Yeah.
So that's tough.
Yeah, he's proved himself time and time again. He's clutch, and he's not scared of the moment. That move to Indiana helped his career a lot.
Yeah.
It helped a lot. It definitely helped a lot. Brett Brown, the Sixers coach, I had the pleasure of covering a couple of his events, including his coaching clinic. The team loves him. The organization loves him. He seems like a hands-on coach, which he is. What's your thoughts on Brett Brown?
He's a really good coach and a fantastic guy. And I think the thing that people forget sometimes when they talk about Brett is sort of the unprecedented run he's had as a coach. You know, most in the NBA, when you're the coach of a team that is going through a rebuild, you're never there when they get good. Never. It never happens. And Brett has really been the coach of probably 10 different teams since he's been in Philadelphia.
True.
And the fact that he made it through those years you know, the three really horrible years, and he's been through three general managers. And think about this, Elton Brand, like, was a player for him, and now he's a general manager. Like Elton Brand was amnestied by the Sixers,
right?
And then came back basically to be Jahlil Okafor's babysitter as a player. And now is the general manager, and Brett Brown has been here through all of that. You know, I think he's been through a lot. You know, there are a lot of people who want to blame him every time the Sixers lose a game. And yeah. I don't know that that's the right thing to do. I think he deserves this year to try to get to the finals. Definitely. And show his worth. Right. It's not an easy team to coach. Everybody, a lot of new guys, that the pieces don't really fit in the way that most basketball teams fit. So right. We'll see. I think he's done a pretty remarkable job as a coach of the Sixers over the last 7 years. And I think he should be proud of that.
Definitely. I know at the beginning of the season, you said you wanted to go after the number one seed. That may be out of reach right now or the rest of the season, but they definitely can move up to at least, I say they can move up to maybe two. They can fight for the two seed. We'll see, like you said, we'll see how the rest of the season goes, because like you said, 2-6 is basically 2.5 games separating each team, if that.
Yeah.
So we'll definitely see.
Yeah.
We definitely want to see.
Yeah, you know, the Heat are better than everybody thought.
Yeah.
The Celtics have gone through a tough stretch, but still pretty good team, you know.
Yeah, Kemba Walker stepped in. Kemba Walker stepped in over there, stepped right in.
Yeah.
Not lost a beat.
And the Raptors haven't been healthy. And you know, as soon as the Raptors get healthy, I think right. they're going to have a really strong second half of the year. So
yeah.
It'll be an interesting last couple months of the season.
Yeah, the Raptors, I think, are maybe the biggest surprise team in the East right now, because a lot of people thought because Kawhi left, they were going to fall off. I mean, I was one of them. I didn't expect them to be second in the East right now, but they are. That's why they got to play the games.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you look at last year, they had a really good record. You know, Kawhi played 60 games, and
yeah.
I think the Raptors were like 16-6 or 17-5 without him.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
You know, it surprises everyone, but it really, when you think about it, it really shouldn't have surprised us. We should have all seen it coming.
Right, exactly.
You know?
Exactly, because yeah. the way they played without him, because Kawhi did a lot of load management last season.
Yeah.
What's your thoughts on that? Because a lot of people don't like it. A lot of people don't. Now, LeBron went on record. LeBron said he's not going to do it if he's healthy, but now all of a sudden LeBron's doing it. Because LeBron's, what, 30,
yeah, that
36
dude, he's
now?
A liar, man. I mean, that dude, he took off. I mean, his last year in Cleveland, he took off 3 weeks and just went to Miami in the middle of the season.
Exactly.
I mean, he's a liar. here's the only thing that bugs me about
right.
it is that, look, I'm a season ticket holder for the
right.
Sixers.
Okay.
And the NBA does this thing where they, you know, you go to the movies. Let's say you go to the movies.
Right.
No matter what movie you're going to see, the movies are the same price, right?
Yeah.
Like, if you go to see a bad movie, it's $12.50. If you go to see a good movie, it's $12.50. It's always
$12.50. Right. Right.
But when you go to an NBA game, when the Lakers are coming to town, a ticket might be $185,
exactly.
But when the Jazz are coming to town, that ticket might be $65.
Right.
So if you're going to charge me more money because the good players are coming,
yeah,
and the good players decide not to play because they're resting,
right?
I think that's unfair, and I think that's unfair to the consumer. And I'm fine with players doing whatever they need to lengthen their careers.
Right.
But I think it's unfair of the league and unfair of the teams and the owners to knowingly charge people more money based on who the players are.
Right.
And then you have to pay it anyway. Like, again, if you go to this movie and you're going to see, I don't know, the new Tom Cruise movie.
Right.
And you show up there and they're like, "We're sorry. For this showing of the movie, it's going to be Tom Cruise's understudy."
Right.
You best believe a lot of people are going to be at the ticket window demanding their money back, right?
Right.
They're like, they came to see the Tom Cruise movie, not Tom Cruise's understudy. So
definitely.
If I paid you know, $300 for a ticket to go see the Lakers come into town because I want to see LeBron and AD.
Right.
And not because they're injured, but because they just decided to take the night off to rest. That doesn't seem okay to me. You know, that's the problem I have with right. that.
Yeah, because the NBA tried to crack down on it, but you really can't. Because teams want to protect their players. And players basically aren't going to play if they don't want to play. So especially back-to-backs. So
well, and they'll just make up an injury. They'll just say, oh, he's got hamstring tendonitis, or he's got a sore ankle, sore back, or you know, they'll just make something up. There's almost no way you can do anything about it. That's the problem.
Exactly. Let's switch to the West real quick. What's your thoughts on the West? Who do you see coming out of the West? Because this right now is like, so everybody has a 2-way race between the Lakers and the Clippers, but you never know. So, but out of those two teams, I think the Clippers have more depth, but you have LeBron James. But if LeBron plays heavily during the rest of the season and he tires out during the playoffs, I don't think Anthony Davis is enough to beat the Clippers by himself. That's what I think. I don't think he is.
I would take the Clippers. I know they haven't played as well as the Lakers have.
Right.
But I look at that roster and
a 7-game. Yes.
Yeah, and defensively and offensively, yes. the Clippers are like they just have so many guys that can get you a big bucket. They have Kawhi, they have Lou Williams and Paul George. And just defensively, being able to throw Kawhi and George and Beverly
and
Harkless and Harrell, like they just have a lot of guys, and I would bet on the Clippers. I would rather them play well all the time.
Right.
But if I had a bet, I would bet on the Clippers.
And the Lakers beyond LeBron and the top, they're top heavy, and there's a lot of youth on the Lakers. I mean, besides they have a couple vets, but like McGee and Dwight Howard, but there's a lot of youth also, and it gets clutch and hands get sweaty. We all know how it can go. So
we'll definitely see.
Spike,
yeah, I agree.
Spike, thank you so much for joining me, man. We got to do this again. This was fun. This was definitely fun, man. Hey,
anytime. It was fun. Yeah, I had a good time, man. Thank you for having me on.
No problem. And good luck to the Sixers. I'll be watching, and I'm listening to your podcast. And like I said, we got to do this again. We have time. Enjoy the rest of your night. Thank you for your time.
Thanks, man.
Yes, that was Spike Eskin, half of the rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast and program director at 94WIP. Excuse me. Yes, thanks for joining me on the NBA panel right here on DETV. Catch you next time.